The one thing I know for sure is baseball will be back. Whenever it's safe to play, we'll be back. Our fans will be back. Our players will be back. And we will be part of the recovery, the healing in this country from this particular pandemic.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Oh, man, the white stripes. Pumping, sounding good. I don't know why, but as I was walking about the city of Chicago yesterday, like I do on a daily basis, it was a white stripes day for some reason. It just felt Iggy Thump. So that's what I went with. That's what I rolled with. And it continues to sound great in my ears this morning. Ah, good morning. It is the Mark Grody Show in for the Dan Bernstein Show. Today, I am here with you until noon. Yeah. On Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. You know how it is. Some days, you're just in the mood for different things in your ears. And yeah, it was all about the white stripes for me yesterday. Maybe today as well. We'll see what happens when I get off the air at noon today. I am, as a matter of fact, broadcasting live in downtown Chicago right now, overlooking beautiful Lake Michigan. To give you a little bit of a visual, Ohio Street Beach is what I overlook. And I'm standing up right now. I'm walking to the window, so I hope it's not too distracting. And I still see... I actually see now two boats out there, one of which has a water skier trailing behind him. The other one is moving slowly and ominously throughout the Ohio Street Beach area. So that's your visual. I'll let you know if the boat traffic picks up here in Chicago, which it tends to do around this time of the year, especially since it is 4th of July Eve. It is July 3rd here today. So that's the boat scene right there. I can see about as far as Castaways. You know that place Castaways, like the boat that is docked, that is a that is a bar and a restaurant, Belmont. Can't quite see Wrigleyville, but the Ville is alive with summer baseball camp today. Bridgeport is sprouting. I have to ask my neighbors about the south side view. Bridgeport is sprouting with White Sox baseball as well. We have reporters at both sites today. The Bears will be first up today. But I've also been working on a project over the last 2 days, which I'm going to preview right now. So I went through every single Major League Baseball roster, the rosters, the depth charts, to find out who is where and who is still in a particular place that you may have forgotten. Maybe that I had forgotten, because this is that time of the year where you're like, oh yeah, that guy is there. And oh, where is Carl Edwards these days? Where's Starlin Castro playing these days? You know where some of the heavies are. We'll give you the heavies too. Where's Cole Hand? Well, we'll let you know about those guys. It's a segment that I'm going to call Where Are They Now 2020. I had a lot of fun doing the research, a lot of work doing the research, so you shall enjoy this. You will enjoy it. Sit there and enjoy it at some point in time in this show today. So, yeah, it's going to be the players that my eyes notice. Some stars, some not, former White Sox, former Cubs, etc. I think you will find it, like I said, very informative. We are going to talk White Sox baseball with Josh Nelson of Sox Machine at 10 o'clock. We'll do the Cubs at 11 with Tim Stebbins of NBC Sports Chicago. Looking forward to talking to Tim about what's going on in Wrigleyville today. And I'm going to talk about the Bulls because they still may be in play this season. But really what I want to get to as it pertains to the Bulls is building the Bulls and rebuilding the Bulls and what you do when the draft comes along, because we are not that far from it. I heard a great idea for the Bulls that I want to bring back to you a little bit later on in the show as well. If you would like to interact, please text me or call me at 312-644-6767. We are bundled, so the text and calls are on the same line. You can call anytime you'd like. I'm on Twitter, at Mark Grody Sports. I hang out on Instagram, also on Facebook as well. We can play in those two places as well. Sean Anderson and Christopher Dickens are our producers. They are my colleagues. They are my friends. They are here for me. They are here for you. Give them a call, talk to them, and then we can talk as well. While we still do not
know... Don't cut me off, please.
Hey, man. He and I, Bob and I, he called and we made up. We're totally cool now. I don't cut him off anymore. And he said nice things to me and about me. So apparently we're cool now. While we still don't know what an NFL regular season will look like, or completely if there will be an NFL season, well, we can't even really dunk on that yet. What I do know is that this NFL season is already better than last year's NFL season. What? Well, that's because two preseason games have reportedly been or will be eventually deleted from 2020. I don't know that the official word has come out. I know the Associated Press and Pro Football Talk has had it up. I haven't seen an official email from the NFL nor from the Bears, but it seems like it's been sourced pretty well that a couple of games will be deleted from 2020 preseason style. And you know, I know, 32 teams in the NFL know, four preseason games is too many. And in this era, coaches only take about, what, six quarters seriously? You need to look any further than Bears head coach Matt Nagy. He has managed preseason in the first 2 years here, and he's taken about, what, four quarters seriously, if that? So, sounds strange. As much as we don't like preseason, and we're talking about getting rid of preseason games, preseason actually matters now. There's urgency to it in terms of real evaluation. So the season is already better. It's already a better NFL season, in my opinion. And it just got way more interesting for the Bears because they have a quarterback competition. And Matt Nagy told us in the last couple of months that starters, actually it began back at the combine. This is the pre-COVID era in February when Nagy told us, I'm definitely gonna run for the preseason differently this year, as in starters will play more, they will play longer. I don't know exactly what that means or what he meant by it in terms of how long they play, but they definitely will play longer. And Nagy said this. Let's give you a quick reminder here via audio. Nagy said this about the importance of the preseason as it pertains to Mitchell Trubisky versus Nick Foles. Matt Nagy sounds better than ever. That coffee is just absolutely wonderful.
Sorry about that, Mark. I was screening a phone call. What'd you call for?
No, that's okay, man. Yeah, the Matt Nagy tape where he is discussing the importance of the preseason with Trubisky and Nick Foles.
For sure, yeah. Again, what's been presented to us is four preseason games. And so if we're able to – we play those four preseason games and that's the way it goes, just like I said before, that's the best time for us to be able to get that evaluation process going. And so we need to get as many reps as we can to be able to see what they're doing when we do it. And so to answer your question, yes. And does that mean more reps? Possibly. Yeah, probably for in that situation. So we're going to do everything we can. And then if we need to, have more competition type levels, 11 on 11 type deals in practice, we'll do that too. We got to. And again, remember, this isn't just for the quarterbacks, but it's a lot of positions across the board, which will be great.
So that's Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach. And that obviously was before we knew or he knew that it's possible that there will only be two preseason games. So now you get two games to figure it out, we think, because that could even change still. Maybe they just completely delete the preseason. Maybe it'll end up being one game. I don't trust that it's necessarily going to stay at two. So the QB competition, it is really going to be difficult to actually decide on a quarterback competition between Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky in two preseason games and on the Lake Forest practice fields. You can get a lot done, but it's – I don't think you can come up with an actual fair conclusion on a quarterback. So that said,
I think Mitchell Trubisky should start the season for the Chicago Bears this year. And if it looks too much like last year right away, then you go to plan B. 312-644-6767 if you want to jump in here. Trubisky, I think he should start because no matter how smart and competent Nick Foles is, and I do think those are appropriate adjectives for Foles, Trubisky knows this offense. He knows the players' tendencies better right now. And, yeah, that matters. That really does matter. And let's hear from Trubisky right now. Let's remember how, possessive Trubisky is being towards his players and towards his offensive weapons. Here's Trubisky.
I think it's going to be a good competition. And Foles has had has a crazy career as well. So it's been cool having him in our room talking ball. I know we're going to push each other, but I still feel like this is my team, and I'm excited for the competition and just get back on the field with my guys and show everybody what I can still do and how hard I've been working this offseason to help the Bears win games this year. So it's been interesting, but again, it's a business decision, and I'm all for the Bears getting better and helping us win games.
My team, my guys, and he was talking about, as you recall, about the signing of Nick Foles and what his reaction to it was, and he gave the line pissed off in a good way, which caught all of our ears, those of us who were collectively on that Zoom call. And I did. I love the way Trubisky was speaking. He was speaking about a guy who has nothing left to lose. And oftentimes in life, if I may go Ditka on you, when we feel like we have nothing to lose, it is oftentimes when we do our best work. So that's part of why I love the way Trubisky was talking, and I do hope it translates well and similarly to his talk on the field. And because of the zero off-season program, and who knows what training camp will actually look like, I just think it's too much of a cold play to just throw Foles right in there and expect. I mean, it's almost, when you think about it, it's kind of unrealistic to think that he would just come in Foles and with this abbreviated amount of time, a time which could become even more abbreviated, to think that he's just going to step in and be the quarterback. You know, how much contact will there actually allowed to be in training camp? We have no idea what the parameters will be. How close will they allowed to be to each other? Are we just going to see positions together working out at a distance? So, yeah, I don't know how you can run a true quarterback competition under these circumstances. Same for other positions. So we've talked about this. Like, my number one concern is that cornerback spot opposite of Kyle Fuller. I love Jalen Johnson. I think Jalen Johnson is going to be a pro for a lot of years. The Bulls or the Bears second round pick out of Utah, number 50 overall. I think he's going to be terrific. I don't think he's going to start the season. I think there's a really good chance that we see Kevin Tolliver getting lots of playing time early on, just because, again, at a position that important and that complicated to learn in this NFL, it's unrealistic to think that a lot of these guys, hell, you know, the top cornerback in the NFL, Jeff Okuda, the kid going to Detroit out of Ohio State, is it realistic to think that he'll step on the field and make an impact right away? I don't even think that that's the case, unless Detroit has something going on that we don't know about. So I just think that you're going to be more comfortable probably with Tolliver right off the bat because of this truncated offseason. Wide receiver, how do you get, and I know Mike Furry talked a lot about Riley Ridley, and we all want to see Riley Ridley get out there and thrive and do great things, but how do you get Riley Ridley out there and on the next level? How do you get Darnell Mooney on the field, the Bears' fifth round pick? The speedy 4.2, 4.3 40 guy, how do you get him out on the field and get in real time? This is probably not a lot of room for development this season for two reasons. One, the compromise offseason that I'm talking about. Two, it is something of a must-win for the Bears this year. You can't mess around. And the reason that this is a must-win year for the Bears is because of the following. Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, Robert Quinn, Eddie Jackson, Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Goldman, on and on. You have stars on defense. You have a, you got like a, you have a playoff core. I'll save you the hyperbole and not call it a Super Bowl core, Bears, but it is a, this is a playoff core, no doubt about it, with legit stars, man. Mack is a superstar. Kyle Fuller is a star. Akeem X is a star. Eddie Jackson is a superstar. Roquan Smith might get there. So you cannot, you can't waste this year like you did last year. Nothing lasts long in the NFL. We know all about that. And yeah, so when you talk about the rookies, I don't know how much more you're going to be able to do beyond those top two guys in Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson, both of whom I'm skeptical about just because of the shortened time as well. So just those two guys. And then we talk about the defensive end, Travis Gibson out of Tulsa. I love it. I love his measurables and what he did in college last year at Tulsa. I mean, he's 6'4", 6'5", 8 sacks last year. I'd love to see them develop Travis Gibson, but I don't know if there's going to be time to do that. Kendall Vildor, kid out of Georgia Southern, could play cornerback, could play inside, outside too, they say. Are they going to be able to actually develop him as a position player? We talked about Darnell Mooney, and then the two seventh-rounders, the two tackles, or the two offensive linemen, Arlington Hambright and Lechavius Pig Simmons as well. Do you have time to develop seventh-round draft picks, considering the struggles of the offensive line last year? So, man, I love when you go into a season, and particularly training camp and Bourbonnais. I love watching the draft picks. It's my favorite part of it. I love watching them develop because that's the way your team is built, and those tend to be the most intriguing guys. This year's going to be different in that regard. Like, normally I'd be all over, like, the Travis Gibson watch and Arlington Hambright and all those guys, Darnell Mooney. But really, it's can you even get Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson up to speed? So that's, you know, that's the, and this is what all teams are dealing with. I mean, I mentioned the, look at your competition. Detroit, is Jeff Okuda going to be able to play? They're stud CB out of Ohio State. Minnesota took the wide receiver, Justin Jefferson. Is he, are they going to be able to plug and play? Although Minnesota had like 30 draft picks this year. So they are a complete who knows type of team. They're probably going to get some hits considering the quantity, but is there quality mixed in with all that? Minnesota, definitely a team to watch. We know Jordan Love's place on the Green Bay depth chart and on the roster. So obviously that's not going to play out this year. In Minnesota, of course, meaning that they had 80 draft picks, had two first rounders. I'm just looking at it right now. Jeff Gladney out of TCU, another cornerback who, yeah, if I was Minnesota, I would look at that very similarly to Jalen Johnson. And can you actually come up with a plan for these guys and develop them? So there are some complications, I think, unique to football that are, you know, that are going to play out. So we shall see how that goes down. But 312-644-6767 is the number. I'm doing some multitasking right now. All right, sorry, there's some text messages I can't quite read here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, and we're going to do more football later as well, because there was a great breakdown that I heard that I want to bring back to you on Roquan Smith's year last year, on Khalil Mack's year last year, and Robert Quinn too, and what you could expect out of him. So definitely more Bears talk on the way. Josh Nelson of Sox Machine at 10. Tim Stebbins of NBC Sports Chicago at 11. Coming up next, what's going on with the Bulls? Are we still going to see Bulls basketball in July this season? And beyond that, I'll tell you what's really most important for the Chicago Bulls. And I actually don't think I'm going to mention Jim Boylan in this segment. It's Mark Grody. In for Dan Bernstein, this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Only the Bulls, only the Bulls, only the one and only Chicago Bulls. Yes, sir.
they still may be in play. Who can set the court on fire? Those Chicago Bulls. It's Mark Carotti in for Dan Bernstein today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I will be here with you until noon today. Again, 312-644-6767. Let me read a few of your text messages before we get to the Bulls. I do appreciate you guys interacting with me. When you do, I'll read them and we'll talk about it. We'll talk. From the 630, Grody dance party time. Oh, yeah. Look, when I'm on there, there's always the threat of a dance party breaking out. 219, Grody, kudos to you over the last month. You've been grinding it in every time slot. Yes, I have. Well, I'm kind of a, I am a, I have very special skills. I was brought in here as a COVID-19 specialist, show specialist, so I am required to Ben Zobrist the score. So thank you, though, for that. I appreciate that.
He's a baller. He balls.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm a baller. I wish I was a little taller, but I am a baller. I'm all ball, Tupac. Let's see. From the 864, thanks for helping me picture Lake Michigan today. Absolutely. Yeah, the update is still beautiful, still gorgeous. I see ripples from the boats, but there are now, oh, no, just one boat. Still one boat on the, here on Streeterville Lake, Ohio Street Beach. One boat with one person trailing behind. And now from the distance and gaining serious momentum, it is a jet ski. Yep, jet ski. Coming in hard. There's always, to me, there's always danger when you get a jet ski guy. Yep, yep. So that we'll continue to monitor that situation for you. 864, absolutely great, and call at first. LOL, I don't know what that is. 847, the exasperated sigh when the naggy clip didn't come up right away has me chuckling. LOL, love you, Groats. I don't think, no, actually that was a, I just had a sip of coffee sigh. You have to do that when you have a sip of coffee in the morning, a nice coffee sigh. And then as it pertains to that, you know that's going to be played in the afternoon show, right, Grody? The sip of your coffee? Well, maybe, but I, from what I understood listening to Mac and Parkins yesterday, those guys aren't working together for like the next 2 months or something like that. Yeah, but Mark from the 847, if you can't hit a bull in the ass with a banjo, in the words of Uncle Fuzzy, what does Mitch knowing his guys better matter? Well, I guess I just have too much faith that Mitch is actually going to be better this year. So there you have it. All right, I will read more of your text messages later. And keep them coming. 312-644-6767 is the number. The NBA is closing in on, and I haven't seen anything official on this as of yet. The NBA is closing in on signing off on a second bubble in Chicago for the eight teams that were not invited to play in Orlando, the Bulls being one of them, enabling mini training camps and subsequent games against other clubs with a target date of September, sources tell ESPN's Jackie McMullen. A few weeks ago, I would have been like, this is ridiculous. It's a loser's tournament. I don't want to see it. I'm done watching the Bulls. But you know what my attitude is now? Why not? If this all comes to be, we will have gone from zero sports to basically all sports. We will have gone from, my God, are we ever going to get sports back? What are we doing? We're all suffering. We're all hurting financially in every way, shape, or form, to, good God, there's too much sports going on. I can't do anything else but watch sports. So this is going to be like the NIT of the NBA, or what is it? Is it the CBI? Is that the third college tournament? CBI?
You're right.
CBA?
Yeah.
Is that it? CBI?
The tourney, it's like NIT and CBI.
And I, honest to God, Sean, I think there's another one too, but I know that the CBI came about last year. So that's what this would be. It would be the CBI of the NBA, which is interesting. I mean, I guess off the top of my head too, you're like, why push it? You're already going crazy trying to figure out if you can do this 22-team bubble in Orlando and do it safely. And then the NBA wants to maybe, and this is just a report, add eight more teams. So you're going to have dueling bubbles going on in separate locations where all the protocols would have to be in place, because you'd have to have the exact same protocols. even for the even though they're not winners, you still got to have the same safety for both bubbles. So, hey, if you want to try to do it and try to pull it off and put up with the with what I would think would be a pain in the ass to have two bubbles going, then the more the merrier, more for us to talk about, more for us to report on. And I'm just like, come on, bring it on. Let's just have this big pot of sports overboiling coming in late July. But really, so the NBA is scheduled to resume July 31st. The next date, though, that Bulls fans should truly concern themselves with is August 25th. That's when the NBA draft lottery would be. Oh, yeah, the NBA draft lottery. It's actually not that far away. The draft would be October 6th. And in our language these days, would be is the two of the best words, would be. So we'll see if that actually goes down. According to CBS Sports' math, there are eight NBA teams whose odds are set in stone. That's right, we're doing this. Lottery odds. Golden State. What the hell? Yeah, Golden State has a 14% chance of getting the number one pick. Cleveland, 2 at 14%. Minnesota, 3, 14%. All the same, right? Atlanta, 12.5. Detroit, 10.5. That's 5. The sixth best odds, the New York Knickerbockers, at 9.0. And here are your Bulls at 7. That's their magic number. The Bulls, 7.5%. Just so perfect. And then 8 is Charlotte, if you'd like. The Michael Jordan Bobcats at 6.0. Unless the Bulls win the number one overall pick in this year's draft, do something differently. And I love it was on this very show, on the Dan Bernstein show, that I was listening to Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports Chicago. He was a guest, and I caught something. It was subtle, but I thought it mattered a lot. He suggested to Dan Bernstein earlier this week on The Score the following.
You know, I think that the last thing this team needs is another new young player. I think that they would be best served to try to trade that pick. The only issue with that is, this draft is not considered to be very good by most talent evaluators, and that means the value of that pick is not going to be that high. There is a chance, of course, they could move into the top four when the lottery hits, and maybe that would make that pick a little bit more valuable. I think that they have to make some hard decisions early. I don't think you can just sit and wait and go, well, we've got a year to play with this. We can evaluate everybody, and then next summer we'll make our decisions. If the opportunity strikes, maybe there's a team out there that has some real financial pressures, and they're looking to move a fairly sizable contract of a high-quality NBA player. Take that lottery pick. Take the player that you've decided in your evaluations really doesn't fit with what you want to do going forward, and make that trade now. You might be able to get a better deal now than you could a year from now when teams know I have a better idea of what their financial situation is. I know that they probably want to be patient and evaluate some of these young guys, but for example, say you've decided that Wendell Carter Jr. at 6'9 is not the center that fits with the way you want to run your system. You've got Lauri Markkanen most likely established at the power forward spot, assuming that they do at some point extend him. Put Wendell Carter Jr. in with the pick and see what you can get back. I think that, you know, we've waited so long for these pipe dreams of free agency. You know, every 2 or 4 years it comes up that, oh, the Bulls got cap space and they're going to be going big game hunting. And we've seen what that's resulted in. The hope is that Karnishevis and the new front office and potentially a new coaching staff will make them more attractive to free agents. But until somebody comes, you have to assume that that's not the best route to go. I'm of the mind that you've got to be aggressive. I think as the second youngest team, we've seen what that does in terms of your ability to play consistently on the court. I'm all for trying to bring in veterans if they become available either this offseason or at the trading deadline next year. You know,
Mark Schanowski again on the Dan Bernstein show earlier this week. The last thing they need is another young player. Yes, yes, amen. Especially when it has been, and I'm sure it will be again, the number 7 pick. It's proven to be no man's land for the Bulls, really. And there's two guys on the roster, when I went through the roster, that fall under the category of who are you players, as in I don't know if you're good, or what it is that you'll be doing when you are good. Maybe you're good, but I really don't know.
And they are the Bulls' last two draft picks. Number 7, Wendell Carter Jr., drafted number 7 overall, 2018, heading into his third year with the Bulls. In his first year, 44 games started, 10.3 points per game, 7 rebounds per game. Year 2, 43 games, 11.3 points per game, 9.4 rebounds per game. A big part of why I don't know who he is because he hasn't stayed healthy. He's certainly not been one who affects the game in a big way, and to me has looked lost at times on the floor. Is he, as Chernowski brought up, is he a center? Is he a power forward? Who are you? Who exactly are you? He would seem like a guy who would be a trade candidate, and it seems like I've not covered nor have I met Wendell Carter Jr., but when I read reports about him from the Bulls beat reporters and hear him on television and post-game shows or pre-game shows, he seems like a really mature young kid who's got leadership skills, but he hasn't done enough in the NBA to really, truly have a big voice in the locker room. So he's a guy, it seems like it would be, just based on that, it seems like it would be awesome if he was good, just because he's got the personality to go with it and a seemingly legitimate want to win and to be good and earnest in everything he does. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, when he came out, there were people who thought, you know, he's going to be a star because he was kind of in the background a little bit at North Carolina. He has not been that, and maybe a big part of it is has been his inability to stay healthy. So he's my first guy of a who are you type of guy. And then the other one is Coby White. Coby White, who are you? Are you a point guard? Are you a two guard? Are you a starter? Are you a bench guy? And it's probably not fair because it was his rookie year. I get it. 65 games last year, one start. Right when the NBA cut off, remember that was about the time that it was finally Jim Boylan had finally either gotten the green light to or decided that, yeah, we're going to go ahead and start Coby White, just see what he's got. The lights are off and Coby has developed nicely throughout the season. So that, remember, that's when that all went down. And but he did have, remember those two, put him in the Hall of Fame. He had those two great games off the bench in November. One against the Knicks, where he just went off from three-point land, scored 27 points, but it was the threes that caught your eye. 7-11 from three. And then a couple nights later, in Milwaukee, 26 points and another 6 three-pointer. So that was the point at which you're like, okay, is this Vinnie Johnson, old school Detroit Pistons, bad boys, Vinnie Johnson coming off the bench and just lighting it up? And I'm sure there are better examples from the present that I could give, like Jamal Crawford, something like that. That was it. Yes. Put him in the hole. And we were all very excited about Coby White at that point. But it didn't make it. It made it even more complicated as to what Coby White is, what position he is best suited for, what role he is best suited in. And that's why I'm glad that you do have two new bosses at the top who will give it an evaluation, and we ultimately will find out what they think of him and what role that they think he should be in. And I think it'll be a lot more decisive. So I want to know about them. I don't put Lauri Markkanen in this category. I actually just think he's good. Despite also being the 7th pick in the draft.
Put him in the Hall of Fame!
Yeah, put him in there too! He is, I think Markkanen, despite having an off year, I think he's going to be really good still. He needs to toughen up a little bit, but ultimately that's not his game. He doesn't have to be tough, he just needs to toughen up. There's a difference. The Bulls need to define his position a little bit better. He will definitely benefit from new everything on the Bulls in terms of defining him better. It is the final year of his rookie deal, but I think like the two, I still think that that's your core. Like other than that, everything is up for grabs. He and Zach LaVine are your core still. Little recent draft history I just brought up here. So 2019, Coby White and Daniel Gafford from last year. 2018, Wendell Carter Jr. and Chandler Hutchison. 2017. That's where you got LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen for Jimmy Butler. I love that. I still do. I think the Bulls will have won that trade. If you, considering that Jimmy Butler has bounced around and not been a great citizen to his team at times, you could even make a case that that's already been won for the Bulls. But I still like that deal. That's the kind of stuff that you need to see going forward from Arturis Karnišovas. But that was a good move by John Paxson. It really was. 2016, the Bulls drafted Denzel Valentine and Paul Zipser. In 2015, Bobby Portis. Come on, Bobby. In 2014, Yusuf Nurkic, Gary Harris, and Cameron Bairstow. In 2013, Tony Snell and old Eric Murphy. 2012, remember Marcus Teague? Remember how much Tom Thibodeau loved Marcus Teague?
Put him in the Hall of Fame!
Yeah. Well, he did play at Kansas, right? No, Kentucky. And Jimmy Butler in 2011. So really two, in terms of the draft, between 2011 and 2019, two what I would call successful years. Jimmy Butler was a huge hit, big-time hit for the Bulls. That was a great draft pick by John Paxson. You saw him where other teams didn't, and you developed him into a star in the league. So I will say that's a success. That's one really big-time success. And I do think 2017 is a success or will have been a success if you want to dumb it down a little bit. So it is time for more creativity. Instead of picking, I haven't looked very closely at the draft and who's really good and what guys will make an impact and how deep the draft really is from what I've heard, just from hearing things peripherally, that it's not great this year beyond your top three guys. So if it's not that, then right. The Bulls don't need another young player while they're still trying to figure out their other young guys and what kind of an impact they might make, on those guys. So I think Markkanen and LaVine are, I'm going to go ahead and say that to me, they're untouchable. And Wendell Carter Jr. Those two guys are both at this point, who are you type of guys. There is still value there by way of age and draft status with Coby White and Wendell Carter Jr. And I'm not giving up on Coby White especially. I want to make that clear. I mean, he may still be a star in this league, but I'm just kicking this around for the idea of if you do want to get creative and you do want value, two young guys, young first-round picks, that does matter. So there is value in those guys. There is value in Otto Porter Jr. Yes, there is. 27. In the midst of a four-year, $106 million deal. A lot of GMs had their eyes on this guy. The Bulls were actually the third team willing to pay him. Remember, he signed that deal with the Wizards after the Nets went after him they set the market, and then the Nets went ahead and matched it. So, in essence, you had three teams that were very interested in that player. First year with the Bulls, 2 years ago, 17 points. Per game in a small sample of 15 games, but he was good. Last year he was hurt, played in 14 games. Or this year, do you say? Thomas Satoransky, 1 year deal, or I should say 1 year done on a 4 year deal at about $10 million per. Wasn't great for the Bulls last year, but there is still value there, and everybody loved when the Bulls signed him. I mean, he was supposed to be their, like, really sneaky good draft pick, or not draft pick, good signing from last year, and then he didn't quite fit in right. And that was the theme with the Bulls last year. You had a lot of really good individual talent that didn't necessarily come together correctly. Even those core guys that I was talking about went on the court together. LaVine, Markkanen, these guys didn't always look quite right. So it's the meshing point still has to get better, and you have to take a bunch of guys that are, I think, super talented guys and make them into a team. And it may take some sort of surprising and creative move by Arturis Karnišovas or Mark Eversley, whoever ultimately is pulling the trigger on such things, to make this team better. But I do think
it's incredibly intriguing to think about it. And as far as back to the potential Bulls bubble here in Chicago, I guess that would be, and now I will have lied because I am going to mention Jim Boylan in this segment. I mean, if they do this where there is that second bubble, does that press the Bulls into making a decision more quickly? Does it mean that they would be more want to leave Jim Boylan there because they've got to get pressed into service and get going right away? And I just feel anger. I haven't looked at the text line, but I feel anger when I say something like that. But it'll be really interesting to see how this goes down. 847, while Laurie has been a surprisingly good rebounder, he's actually that good of a shooter and is always hurt. He's not actually that good of a shooter. I think he can be a really good shooter. I'm kind of the opposite of that. I think he's had moments as a rebounder. I don't ultimately think that that's where he's going to thrive in the NBA. I think he will be a good scorer. I think that's what he's going to be. So we shall see. What? From the 773, Jimmy Butler was a Matt Lloyd pick, not John Paxson. I don't know about that. I think that was I know who Matt Lloyd is. I think that was a John Paxson pick. Yes, I do. From the 224, Laurie sucks. Trade him for a bucket of biscuits and move on. Okay. Put him in the hole, says the 864. 708, Carter was a Duke guy, not NC. Oh, yeah. Is that? Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, yep. I got my Dukes and NCs mixed up for sure. All right, got to take a break. I'm Mark Grody, in for Dan Bernstein. We've got baseball guests on the show today. 10 o'clock, Josh Nelson of Sox Machine. 11 o'clock, we'll talk to Tim Stebbins of NBC Sports Chicago. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Jerry Grody.
Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Whoop. Ah, Red Mosquito. Which looks good over Lake Michigan. Mark Grody. In for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Josh Nelson of Sox Machine coming up at 10 o'clock to talk about your White Sox. Baseball is on in both towns. Well, sides of town, I should say. Summer camp, Cubs, White Sox. We get a lot into baseball later. More Bears coming up, too. I want to break down the games of Roquan Smith, Khalil Mack, and Robert Quinn. That is coming soon as well. All right, so I don't know if I did something wrong here. I'm going to need a ruling on the text lines at 312-644-6767. And I want you to be honest with me, too. I don't need you to enable me. If you think I did something wrong here, please absolutely tell me. And Sean Anderson, Christopher Dickens, you guys could chime in on this as well. Please feel free to chime in at any time. So I'm walking about the city. I walk in the city a lot. And I will be specific on where I was because it may matter in terms of how busy or not busy this area typically is. So you can get a little visual if you know the area. I'm walking at a light on Ohio and McClurg, Streeterville. I get the walk sign, to which I am typically very obedient unless I am just in a ridiculous hustle, but typically I'm not. So I walk, as one does when the walk sign comes on. Dude in an SUV starts wailing on his horn, which I hate to begin with. I hate, look, people overuse their horns. That's another topic. And he's honking, and I don't even know, I won't think he's honking at me, because as far as I know, I'm not doing anything wrong. But I stare him down anyway, because it's just annoying. Kind of giving him that incredulous look of, what the hell are you doing? Settle down, dude. It couldn't be that bad. And then he starts yelling out of his window at me. And this is what he said. He said, don't look at your phone while you're walking. And I'm like, what? And first of all, Florida license plate. And yes, New York accent, just the way I did it. Strike one, strike two. I mean, he's yelling at me. He's like, Dylan Betances, Michael Conforto, they're better than you. Pete Alonso. I don't know why I just went to Mets players, but I did. Dylan Betances! So anyway, not good, the credentials that this guy is coming in with. So
Okay. And then number two, look, it's probably not a great idea to, in general, to look down at your phone while you're walking across the street. I admit that. It's probably not great to do, but since the sign said walk, I am not breaking any etiquette or unwritten rule. Am I? If the sign says walk, I feel like I can dance through that sign, if you would like. So guys, Chris, Sean, as I kind of, I admit it, I was lollygagging through that walk sign. I was looking at my phone. I was not paying attention to what was around me. I'm taking my own chances. Did I deserve to be honked at and subsequently yelled at? Batances.
Do you think that he was just concerned for your well-being?
No.
I thought about that, but since he, okay, not he gave me the anger. It wasn't just like a little, like, there's a certain honk on a horn. Like, if you do a little pat, like a little beep, beep, like the one you do when you're pulling out of a parking garage and you don't want to hit anybody on the sidewalk. It was not a friendly honk. It was like a lay on the horn. I'm pissed off at you. And then he starts yelling at me. So I don't think that this was quality time with this particular driver.
Here it is. Okay, Gordy, you were in the wrong because you were just like staring at your phone and lollygagging. But that's a jerk move.
Lollygagging.
Yeah, lollygagging. That was a jerk move, though. The honking on the horn, screaming at you. No need for that. No need for that. You can do whatever the heck you want, all right? You're Mark Grody.
Oh, is that it?
That's it.
So I said, hey, I'm Mark Grody. You don't come in my house, in my ville, with your Florida plates and your New York accent.
I mean, I think you missed a golden opportunity. I think the biggest fault you had was just not responding with, hey, I'm walking here. Just going full Rhinestone Cowboy.
I'm walking here, Conforto. Get off my back. I saw you over there.
You froze in the moment. You froze in the moment. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I did. Well, then, of course, when I don't know, whenever I get honked at, usually if I get honked at, it's when I'm driving, and typically I have done something wrong. I mean, I'll admit it. Nobody ever admits that they did something wrong on the highway. We're all the best drivers ever. And then I feel bad about myself. But this one, I was just like, sir, please. That was not worthy of. And, you know, and I feel like I am somewhat of a professional walker in this city. Like, I follow the etiquette. Like, I hate, like, when people do. Here's when pedestrians deserve to be honked at. It's when you're at a light, say on Michigan Avenue, that an arrow pops up, not the walk sign, but the arrow, and people think they can go, and then there's cars coming from their blind side turning. Those people should honk like crazy at those.
Oh, I'm so guilty of that.
That's a bad move. It's a bad move. And I have gotten to the point where I will be a little vocal about it. I'll be like, don't go. Don't go. You're gonna get hurt, you know, just for your own safety. Just wait, because those cars get the ones that, especially the cars that use those arrows on a daily basis, they will get angry and they will just go.
Don't cut me off, please.
I hate when people walk five wide on a sidewalk. I hate when people stop in the middle of the sidewalk. I hate when people take up the entire bridge to take a picture. Look, you can do all this stuff.
You know what, Mark? You need to put a list together of the things you hate people do on sidewalks then.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, look, hey, you can walk as slow. It annoys me, but you can walk as slowly as you want to stroll down Michigan Avenue or any street in Chicago. You're allowed to walk slowly. I get it. We're all going to slow down at some point in time. I don't like it because I've always got somewhere to go, but you cannot stop. That's a rule. You cannot stop in the middle of a sidewalk. So that is rule number one. And, you know, two wide is fine. Three wide, you're pushing. But if you're going four wide on the sidewalk, you're breaking rules. There is etiquette out there. But, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think it's bad to be looking down on your phone at any time when you're on a street or really even the sidewalk. I mean, you're probably pissing somebody off. But this guy honking, I thought it was a bit much. All right. I'm glad I got to get that off my chest. Coming up next, we will talk about the Chicago White Sox with Josh Nelson of Sox Machine. I'm Mark Grody, filling in for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.